Have you had much sex education before you got married?
Not really. Not really. I knew that having sexual intercourse would probably produce children, and that was acceptable. I wasn't against it, really. But no, not particularly. No, it was just kind of a dumb, a dumb way that I went at things that worked out. I didn't have any right away.
You didn't use birth control?
No. No. I don't think there was anything wrong. I just think I was just one of those happy-go-lucky sort of persons that it just didn't... sex wasn't that important, really. Yes, I never denied my husband, but on the other hand, it just wasn't one of those things that was so necessary in my life. I don't know, maybe I was an oddball.
I wanted to ask you to describe the procedure that you had to go through to obtain a divorce in 1938.
Well, when I found out my husband had stolen his cattle, rustle, you might call it, I decided rather than subject the children to that sort of embarrassment the rest of their lives, it would be better if I got a divorce. So I had quite a talk with my husband about it, and his womanizing. And he just, you know, you just believe everything everybody says. You don't believe me. How could I believe anything else? So he said, I'm going to town. I said, well, I'll go with you. So I went to town. Well, I don't know what he was doing, but I went up to an attorney's office and told him what was going on. And he said, well, the best thing I can say is get a divorce. He said, I hate to say that, but he said, this has been going on too long. And maybe it will kind of wake him up. So he said it would be $25. That would be attorney's fees and the cost of filing the divorce suit. So he wrote the whole thing up, and he said, here, give this to your husband when you get home. Well, when I went downstairs, my husband was standing in front of the car, and I said, here. And he looked at it, and he was stunned. And he said, well, just wait a minute. So he went to see an attorney, and he filed a cross complaint. Well, if he hadn't filed that cross complaint, I would have had the divorce in 48 hours. That it was Oklahoma law. And I filed on the charge of gross neglect to duty and non-support, because I had to use what money my sister had sent me, I think, part of $2,000. $2,000 is what my mother left. And I'd had to use money to put food on the table. And I just wasn't about to keep feeding him and then have him do all these things. So it taught me to have an apartment. I had some very lovely furniture. And I sold that doll to one person for $50. 3 bedrooms. And I think now it's going to cost me $2,000 to furnish a 1-bedroom apartment. Well, but I thought, well, this is the way it is. I guess you have to start losing before you can start winning. So I moved to town then that afternoon after I had handed him the divorce papers. And the school teacher brought my children into town. And
where did you live in town?
Atoka. Oh, in Atoka, in an apartment.
In an apartment.
Mm-hmm. That was just a 1-bedroom one. The little girl had to sleep with me, and the boy slept on a cot. Then I saw that in March. About the 1st of March. And the divorce was granted the 12th of April. So, but the manager of the Wilson Company, who owned the farm where we lived, and we were supposed to be managing, he had told Ed to move. He didn't want him to see what I had done, but he couldn't see anything Ed had done. So he told him that he'd have to leave. And he came right to California, and he wasn't in court when the divorce was finalized. And they told me then, the attorney said, now don't get married for 6 months. And I said, 6 months too soon? I said, 60 years will be soon enough. Oh, he said, well, I see how you feel. There's no one in the background. I said, no one. So he came to California. And he was out here, oh, before I was. 2 weeks, anyway, before I was. I don't know how soon, but at least 2 weeks.
Did you have good friends during all of this time that you could confide in and talk to and where you could get support?
Well, yes, I had one woman that I talked to, and she told me, she said, you know, you've been talking about getting a piano for Catherine so she can have music lessons. And she said, don't do it. She said, Ed is telling everybody that you've got the money and he has a place for it. I was prepared then to hang on to every dime I could. Yes, she told me that he intended to take all of my money and use it his way. But I fooled him. I was a little too smart after one in a procedure like that. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't about to have the same thing happen again. So I didn't put it in the bank. I put it in postal savings where he couldn't touch it. Didn't give us much interest, but I kept it for myself. And that's what I had to get my divorce to live on till I got a job. So I was pretty well depleted of money by the time I got to California.
How long was it before you came out?
I was off packing everything the day after I got a divorce. I was ready to leave. And I took my children back to Blackwell to see their grandparents before I left. And I didn't tell them what he was doing. No point in hurting them. I figured someday I'd have gray hair too. So I didn't tell them. If they wanted to blame me, fine. Whichever way it went, it was not going to be my problem anymore.
How did you come to California?
On the train. Yeah. I came in from Kansas. Had to go to Newton, Kansas, to get on the train. And I said that the grandparents that took me up there to get on the train. And my sister met me in Los Angeles at the Grand Central Station, which I don't think it's been used in years until Amtrak went in. It was a nice train ride, the last one I had. Oh, no, I had one a few years back. I went from Fort Bragg to Willits on that Redwood-owned train route. It was beautiful. I loved the train. No, it was a fast trip, and, it just seemed like 10,000 pounds had been lifted off my shoulders. I was home. And I began looking for a job. I lived with my sister for about 2 months till I found an apartment who would take children here.
Was that in Seal Beach, your sister in Seal Beach?
Mm-hmm. It was right across the street. I paid $18 a month. But we made it.
How soon did you start working at the May Company? Is that the first job you had when you came to California?
Uh-huh. Well, it was only a few months. I looked, and let's see, I came back in April. I think I went to work for May Company around September. But I paid board and room for the two children and me, my sisters. It wasn't free grass. I paid for it. And I got little jobs, digging up a woman's garden for scrubbing floors, cleaning house, cooking meals. Any little thing I could get to do, I did. And I did sewing, but it was so hard to get money out of people. And the more money they had, the less they wanted to pay you for doing these things. The one woman had me tear her husband's suit to pieces and make it over for her. I asked her $5. I got two out of it. And she had money. So I figured the best thing I could do was get a job where I got a steady paycheck. And one of my sister's friends put in a word for me at the May Company. And of course I had to commute from Seal Beach to the May Company, and that cost $2 a week.
How did you do that?
On a pool car. On the days that the rest of them weren't going to go and I had to work, I'd go on the bus. It meant getting up at leaving the house before 6 in the morning, not getting home until after 6 at night. And so the children were on their own.
I was going to ask.
But I'd need money for them to eat. They'd buy the groceries for the dinner. And I hate to tell you how many times I had wieners and peas. But they'd get a good buy on the wieners and peas. And they never once spent the money for candy or anything like that. They really spent it on them. They were good, reliable children. Maybe because I'd explained to them that I had to work and this was what they would have to do for me. We'd have to work together. And we did.
Now, I know it's hard for you to talk about when they went to the home, but I'm wondering if you could tell me more about what led up to that.
Led up to putting them in the orphanage?
Yes.
Well, my sister said she couldn't be responsible. She had things to do, and she just didn't want to be responsible, and she wasn't happy. She just didn't want him running the streets. So I saw what I could do about getting him taken care of. Nobody would take him, so I put him in the orphanage. There I still have the receipts someplace. I kept them so that if there was ever a question, I did my share. Well, Catherine was up there just about maybe 6 months, but Bob was up there a year, because I had gone to work for Douglas. I was looking for work, really, other than the May Company, because transportation was getting to be quite a problem. And the May Company workroom moved from downtown to West Jefferson and Grand. That was their warehouse. It meant that I would get to downtown Los Angeles, then have to take a streetcar and go out to the warehouse. So this was one of those things. They were in a good school. Catherine went to LeConte in Hollywood. And Bob, of course, was in a lower grade. So he was in the elementary, right close to the orphanage. But I went up on the designated days. I worked nights. I'd go up there, sleep on the way to and from, then go to work. And on the weekends where they could go out with me, I'd go and get them, and I'd take them to the show, take them out to eat. And then I moved to Los Angeles so that I could look around better. And there was this upholsterer who wasn't married, and he kept wanting to go with me. I had two children. I know that when they start asking a woman out, they either want marriage or the same man. So I was very reluctant to go. And so he'd come over, he'd take me out to lunch. Sometimes I wouldn't have eaten had it not been for him. Then he'd want to take me out to dinner at night. It was easier to go out with him, because he understood then that taboos were taboos. And so he'd take me out every night to eat, plus take me to lunch daytime. It was nice. He was a nice man, but then he wanted to get married. I had two children, a very impressionable age, and they never accept anything other than their biological parents. No way. There's always a resentment to foster parent, a remarriage anyway. So I finally got this job at Douglas, and I told him, there's no way. I just don't want to get married. So we had a parting of ways. I was very appreciative to him. He was a nice person, but not somebody I could spend my life with. And so then after I got into Douglas, and I could afford to make a down payment, which was borrowed, on a home, I did. And I moved back down to Seal Beach, and I lived with my sister again while the children were in the orphanage. And I still paid board and room. My brother-in-law complained about his daughter was working swing, I was working graveyard, and he was working days. He complained, and so a home of my own was the only answer. So I bought the first one that came up, and I got it all paid for, and I did all, I tore all the inside out, and replastered, made it like new. I couldn't do very much about the kitchen because I couldn't get things to, I couldn't get a new sink, or I couldn't get a new icebox, or I couldn't get a new stove. No, those things were out. I had to use what was there. But the living room, and I made, tore out a wall bed, and I made a small bedroom just big enough for one single bed for my son so that he could have a room. My daughter had to share mine, but we all had separate beds, which made it a little bit better. It was going up in the world. I remember I paid $25 for carpet. And do you know that carpet was still good, didn't show any wear or anything 20 years later? And you know, the Davenport, I had that reupholstered, Davenport and two chairs. But at the end of 10 years, hit it like that and all the sand had come up between your fingers. The children spent a lot of time on the beach. And but I kept it till I could afford something better. And when I was working for Douglas, of course, my wages did come up quite a bit from what May Company paid me. And then I had saved scraps from some of the things that we made up. And I made slip covers and on at home other than what I did at May Company. I wasn't idle. And then May Company had asked me to bring home work so that I could make it at night piece work. I not only got paid for the piecework, I got paid for what I did on the job. But that all, like I said, it was beginning to be too much of a problem getting to and from home to work and then back again. So that's when I put in my application to go to work for Douglas.
How did you first learn about the job at Douglas?
Oh, it was in the paper, so they were advertising. Just like they said, if they're still warm, bring them in. And I guess maybe I was still warm. And I noticed what the interviewer said on the piece of paper. He wrote down, "Real husky." And that's what they wanted, somebody who could lift, and which I did.
What were your initial expectations of what the job would be like before you knew anything
about it? I had
about?
No idea what it was going to be like. They said spot weld. Well, I had all kind of visions, but nothing like what it turned out to be. Spot weld's more or less like sewing, you know, it's spot. And you just keep moving, you step on the pedal and it spots, as long as you've got your foot on the pedal, it keeps welding one spot here and you move the material and you got it made. However, that wasn't the first job. The first one was to learn how to clean the machine up. Well, I started in and I cleaned the machine. I not only cleaned that, I cleaned everything else that wasn't being used. And the foreman saw that I wasn't just standing around. So I guess maybe my father always said, never let the boss find you idle. So that was it.
What was the your first interview to get the job? What how did you go about getting the job?
Well, I went into Douglas. They're in Long Beach, and they were just interviewing line after line of them. It wasn't near what it was like later, I understand. I went through fairly fast because I was more or less on the first wave.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was
they asked
like?
Me, well, they asked me all these questions about the education, where I was born, and if I'd ever been out of the country, and for references from people who knew me, and from the last place of employment. And then we had to have a physical examination, which I found quite revolting.
What was it like?
Well, it was a complete physical. They tried I guess to see whether there was any pregnancy that I realize now, or did later, that they didn't want to hire anyone who was pregnant because that meant they were going to have to pay for the time off and delivery and all that. So, it was a full x-ray and a physical.
Did you have to take any kinds of aptitude tests or skill tests? Anything like that?
No, not really. No. I went through one and one place that I don't even remember what it was that I was applying for. It was some defense plant anyway. It wasn't Douglas. And I went through one of those aptitude tests and they said they'd call me. But I went to work for Douglas, and if they ever called me, I never...
So you applied at more than one place at the same time? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, I went around every place. I was not bashful about asking. I figured the only thing they could do was say no. They couldn't kill me for it.
Did during the interview, did one person interview you, or did more than one
person? Just one. Mm-hmm.
Did they give you any idea of what the job was going to be like? What you could
No. They said they had this opening as a spot welder, and would I like that? And I said, oh, fine. And who was I to say I couldn't do it?